Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to PhillyFanatics.com's Philly Sports Talk. I am Eric Fisher. With me, Gordon Glantz. And we have a couple different things to talk about with you today. And we're going to start it off. It is July, but nothing hot going on right now in terms of we got Eagles training camp coming up, and we'll get to that in a little bit. We have the Phillies. We're heading into the All-Star break. They're playing right now against the Rockies, leading the Rockies 6-2 in the seventh inning in their last game before the break. But we're going to start off with the Philadelphia 76ers, who are in summer league play. And, Gordon, last week we talked about what we want to see from Ben Simmons, the first pick in the NBA draft during the summer leagues. And he's played three games so far leading up to tonight's game against the Bulls. What have you seen so far, and are you satisfied? Oh, Gordon, are you there? Let me try bringing Gordon back up one more time. Gordon, are you there? No? For some reason I can't get Gordon here. We do have Josh here. Josh, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, let me try Gordon one more time. Gordon, are you here?
I'm here.
Okay. Gordon. Gordon, now there, Gordon?
Yeah.
There we are. Thank you. Sorry, okay. Technical difficulties on my side. So, could you guys hear me or no?
I heard you. Yeah.
Okay. So Gordon,
yeah,
starts off, then we'll go to Josh. What? You know, we talked about last week what we wanted to see from Ben Simmons. What did you see, and you know, what questions do you still have left?
My biggest question is for the training staff. I don't know why they didn't make sure he was properly hydrated and stretched before the first game, because everybody's hearts went in their throats when they saw him, you know, get cramps in the game and limp off the court and everything. But other than that, I mean, he's done, you know, everything we were hoping to see when we talked last week. I mean, he was the best player on the court. He handled the ball. He got his teammates involved. And kind of, you know, we also discussed this, how, you know, summer league, it's a lot of loose parts. It's almost like you went to a playground and found four guys to play with against a bunch of other guys, and you really, you know, you're not that in sync, and everybody's trying to, you know, there's other guys who are playing more for, you know, either to get called to the Sixers training camp or for somebody else, or auditioning, or even auditioning for European jobs. So it's, you know, it's all kinds of loose ends that you're playing with, and you know, it's not really a system that he's going to work with night in and night out with the players he's going to be playing with night in and night out. So it's always tough to read. But that said, I mean, some of the passes he's thrown and the way he's able to grab a defensive rebound and just go, you know, run through them, you know, take control of the fast break and dish it to the right guy. I mean, that's all good stuff. And I think, you know, he's just so talented at the game of basketball. That stuff won't go away when he's playing against better competition. As a matter of fact, it may get a little bit better because he may have better people around him. Not that the Sixers are loaded with talent, but you still have better people around you and guys who can get you the ball back and things like that. Obviously, we were hoping to see a good shot or an improved shot. We know he wasn't going to be a standstill great jump shooter, you know, overnight, but that maybe from the time his season ended to now he'd be working on it. And he did hit some shots here and there, but you can see that it, you know, it needs to be worked on as well. So I guess if that's one downside, it's, you know, his jump shot still is a work in progress.
Yeah, I was going to get to that, but I'll say that. Let me get Josh's impressions first. Josh, I don't know how much you got to see out there on the West Coast. Although they did play the Lakers last night, so maybe you got that game. What are your impressions of Ben Simmons so far?
I've been impressed. Start with the Lakers game right there, a matchup between the two top draft picks. Very exciting. D'Angelo Russell, one of the top draft picks in last year's draft, hits a rainbow three-pointer to win it at the end of the game, to edge the Sixers in the game 70-69, but an exciting matchup. And Ingram only had 7 points in the game. Simmons had 8 points, 10 rebounds, and 8 assists, almost a triple-double. So I liked what I saw out of him. That's kind of, you know, what I was expecting. I'm not going to expect him to score 20 or 30 points right out of the gate. I think he can be that type of player. He can be a guy who averages 20-plus points. But I think starting out, you might see some struggles. You might see some struggles with him shooting the ball, as Gordon mentioned. But you're going to see him be a playmaker. You're going to see him rebound the ball. And there's a stark contrast between the two players. At 6'10 and 240 pounds stands Ben Simmons, and Ingram is only 6'9 and 190 pounds. So a big contrast between those two players. They didn't end up guarding each other. so we didn't get to see them, how they matched up offensively and defensively. But, you know, a difference there, Simmons is definitely the thicker of the two players and more of an NBA-ready body, so you like that out of him. And he's had a pretty good week so far, first week of summer camp, and I think he's played well, and I like what I've seen out of him.
Yeah, I want to start off with how I start off my fish and chips column on PhillyFanatics.com. And that, you know, we only saw three. We've seen three games so far, and you know, I was reading stuff from people after the first game, declaring that he's like, you know, destined for stardom, which is, you know, it's just ridiculous. And I don't think after three games we can make a definitive statement either. These are summer league games, like Gordon said. You know, they tend to be, let's say, a little bit looser than the NBA game. In terms of structure, certainly looser structure. He made some circus passes. He made one last night that, you know, he's just not going to make it an NBA game. It's not going to happen. But I will say one thing we wanted to see from him is his shooting, and both you guys mentioned it briefly. And, you know, that was sort of the question mark for Ben Simmons. And, you know, he was 2 of 9 in the first game. He was 2 of 8 in the second game, 3 of 8 in the third game. And again, it's two. I'm not. He's got plenty of time until the season starts to work on this, but he's also had plenty of time since LSU season was over to work on this, especially since they didn't make the tournament. And you know, if he does not improve his shot, teams will back off of him and basically, you know, cut off that drive a little bit and force him to shoot. So I do have some concerns there. It's early, and I'm not going to overreact to it, but I'm a little concerned that his shooting is not very good at all. In fact, after making 6 of 6 free throws in his first game, he only made 4 of 10 from the free throw line in the last 2 games. So he's a dynamic player. He's a terrific rebounder. He's got great court vision. He can do all that, but I still need to see him. Maybe I'm alone here. Is anyone else bothered that, you know, he only scored, I guess he got 10 points in his first game. I think he scored 10, 8, and 6. I expected him to score a little more in a summer league game. Gordon, is my concern misplaced there?
I guess you could look at it two ways. I mean, one way is, you know, he's not being selfish. I mean, if he wanted to score more points, he probably could, but he's still trying to play his well-rounded game in what is not a real structured atmosphere. So in that sense, you could say the guy's willing to get into some kind of team concept and not make it all about him. But in the other sense, I'm a top overall pick. You know, you hate to hang it on him, but everybody's saying, oh, the next LeBron James. And you would think, well, in that scenario, the guy should walk on the court and score 25 points. So somewhere in between, I guess, lies the truth to that question. You know, it's nice that he's trying to do other things and that he is naturally doing other things. He's not trying, and he, maybe not. But you could say, on the other hand, if he hits a few shots, we're probably looking at points in the teens, which is probably a little bit more indicative of where we'd like to see him. I mean, I'm not expecting him to score 20 points a game this season, but I would like to see him in the middle teens and not score 8, 10 points a game. So something would have to change there.
Okay. All right, let's move on to the Phillies here. They go into the All-Star break, and it's always a good time to give the little midterm grades. So I've got them. I haven't posted them yet on PhillyFanatics.com, but I've got my grades ready to go, and they'll be up probably tomorrow morning. But maybe you guys can convince me or help me out a little bit here with some picks. So I'm going to drop some names on you. Josh, we'll start with you. And I'll give you one. How about, give me a grade for Mikel Franco.
Ooh, that's an interesting one. Mikel Franco, he started off to me as like an A or even an A+. He had a really good start to the season. He was hitting in the 300s, and he was hitting for some power, some RBIs, and some home runs. But then he, you know, his home road stats are just unbelievable to me. He's hitting, I think, over 300 on the road, and hitting well below 300 at home, and he's also got more power numbers on the road. So his home road stats, usually you play better at home, and especially in a hitter's friendly ballpark like Citizens Bank Park, you would think he put up better numbers at home than on the road, but it's not that way. He's put up much better numbers on the road. But overall, I would say I would have to give him a B, because I think that he's still very young player, and I think that he has room to improve. Like I said, he started off the season as an A or even an A+, but I would have to give him a B because I expect a little bit more out of him. I thought that he would be, he's hitting in the mid 200s right now, but he does have in the mid-teens in home runs. So he's got some power. He's got a chance to hit 30 home runs maybe this year if he continues at that pace. So I would give him a B right now.
Yeah, Josh, right where I have him. I mean, he's 17 home runs, 49 RBI, leading the team in both, but extremely inconsistent, or if you wanted to say streaky. You know, he hit four home runs in four straight games last week, but then he goes stretches where he doesn't do much of anything. So that's right where I have him. Gordon, one for you. Odubel Herrera, the Phillies' lone all-star.
Yeah, well, I mean, his average has fallen below the 300 mark, and a guy like him, you know, you like to see him be a 300 hitter as well as doing all the other things he does, you know, steal some bases. He does have a little bit of power. He's got 10 home runs. Plays a pretty good center field. So you'd like to see that average up around 300 as well, and I just hope it's not in a free fall, you know, that he ends up being a 275 hitter when it's all said and done. If he can stay up in that area of 295 to 305, I think it'll be a good season. And he is going to the All-Star game, and I think it's well deserved. I think a couple other guys maybe should have been under consideration, but it is well deserved, and I would have to say he would get a B+.
B+. Oh, okay. You gave him. I actually gave him. I have an A-. Maybe you convinced me off of that, but yeah, I he's got seven errors. That's the thing that sticks out to me, and that's a lot of balls drop in front of him, and. You know, he had that one time where he didn't run out the ball and got yanked. But, yeah, I didn't give him the straight A, and neither did you. You actually dropped him further than I did. Josh, let's give you Vince Velasquez.
Vince Velasquez, he's an interesting one also because I think, like Mikel Franco, he kind of came right out of the gate with really strong performance early on in the season. He had that crazy strikeout game where I think he had 16 or 17 strikeouts in one game and set all kinds of records and played really well. But he's kind of fallen off a little bit. But overall, I think he's been pretty good for them. I would have to give him a B+.
B+. Okay. You guys are tough today. I had him an A-. 8-2, 3.32 ERA. But you're right. He doesn't go deep in games because he throws too many pitches. And he's gotten a little better at that, but he's still – has trouble getting through there, although he's pitched pretty well coming off the disabled list. Gordon, let's stick with the starting pitching. Another interesting guy in terms of grading, Aaron Nola.
Yeah, Aaron Nola's a tough one. And again, we're talking about expectations. I mean, like we were talking about with Michael Franco, and he did come out of the gate really well. And if you look at his, he's got 10 quality starts and 17 starts, but 5-8 and 4.69 ERA. I mean, this just, isn't what we expected. And now to the point that he's, being given a break from the rotation. I think. You know, when you're taken where he's drafted, a certain amount of pressure comes with it, and he should expect that. And I don't think he's backing off from the pressure psychologically. But once everybody sees you and kind of knows who you are and what your modus operandi is as a pitcher, it gets a little tougher when you start going around a league. I don't think it's even the second time around a league. It's probably more like his fourth or fifth time around a lot of teams. And people kind of have you figured out, and now it's your turn. It's your turn to make the next move. And I think he doesn't have that overpowering fastball that he can get by with. He's going to have to be, it's always tough when guys get drafted and they say, well, he can be Greg Maddux, Greg Maddux kind of did it with a lot of different ways, but just to say every guy who doesn't throw 95 miles to 100 miles an hour, well, they can be a Greg Maddux is kind of unfair, because you really have to figure it out, and he had to figure it out in his career as well. So, I mean, right now, you can't give him much higher than a C. I mean, looking at those numbers and the fact that he's been temporarily pulled from the rotation, but I don't think in the overall picture we should give up on Aaron Nola. It's just one of those bumps in the road that you're going to get with a guy.
Yeah, Gordon, sorry where I have him at C. I think it's a good analysis, and we should point out that Greg Maddux wasn't Greg Maddux for the first part of his career.
No, he wasn't. No.
He totally became Greg Maddux, so to speak, if that makes any sense to anybody whatsoever. Let's do a couple more. Gordon, Josh, Tommy Joseph.
Tommy Joseph. Run down some of the stats here. He's played in 46 games for them, 151 at-bats. He's got seven doubles for them, 11 home runs for Tommy Joseph. very impressive. He was, you know, a guy that had very high aspirations when he was in the minors and able to come up and do some nice things for them. He's hitting .258, so not a great average, but 21 RBIs. And overall, in, you know, playing about half the games for the team, you know, he came up later. I'm impressed with what I've seen out of Tommy Joseph. I would have to give him an A-.
Oh, went above what I gave him. And part of it is he's been pretty good. Obviously, he's an improvement on the Ryan Howard-Darren Ruff combination, first base. Be hard not to improve on that. But he's pretty streaky also. He's another streaky hitter. And he's got those 11 home runs, but most of them are solo shots. He only has 21 RBI with those 11 home runs. So I might have been a little hard on him. So you might have convinced me to bump him up a little bit, Josh. I'm not taking him up to the A, but I'll take him there. Gordon, I just mentioned the guy's name, the veteran on this team, Ryan Howard.
Yeah, going back to Tommy Joseph real quick, just the fact that he's up and producing at all when it looked like he was going to be the butt end of a joke. You know, who did they get in a trade where they gave up was Hunter Pence, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, you know, so, you know, that fact that he's finally up and producing and, you know, is, you know, and passes concussion problems is a good thing. I'm still waiting for that home run he hit the other night to come down. That was quite a shot. In Colorado. I know it's Colorado, but, okay, I guess I have to get, I don't have to be kind anymore because I think Ryan Howard moved out of my neighborhood here in Bluebell, so he's not my neighbor anymore.
he did
hit a home run the other
house
night.
Is sold.
Yeah.
Yeah, house is sold.
Yeah, whether he's still there, I don't know. I haven't seen him. I haven't run into him at CVS. I did run into a CVS a few times, but I didn't say anything to him. I left him alone, unlike other people. But he, I mean, this is just, it's just painful to watch. I mean, I know there's people out there saying, oh, just let him go, put it out of the misery. You can't do that, I mean, it doesn't work like that. You just have to eat the salary. It's just kind of, you know, he will hit the occasional home run, but you just almost feel bad for him a little bit, you know, how he must feel in the clubhouse with all these young guys who still have, you know, maybe they look up to him a little bit, maybe they're not even sure who he is, but then maybe they just see a veteran who's just collecting a paycheck. You can't really give him much more than a D. I mean, if you look at, although he has a few home runs, you can't really give him much more than a D when you look at the average and the strikeouts and the runners he leaves in scoring position and, you know, and everything else that goes along with it. So I'll give him a D. It would be a D-plus if he's still in the hood, but, yeah, it's a D.
I had him with a D also, and he's got, because he does have those 12 home runs, but he's hitting .155. I mean, I almost gave him an F, and the home runs probably kept him from getting that. But yeah, I can't give much more when you're hitting .155. Josh, the final one, and now we're going to go off the field here a little bit. Pete McCannon,
that's a good one. I want to talk about Cesar Hernandez also, if I could just mention him.
Okay,
but
you can do Cesar Hernandez.
Okay, I'll just say so. Cesar Hernandez had a bit of a slow start, but he's really come on strong. He's overtaken Odubel Herrera for team average. He's hitting .296. He's got 7 doubles, 6 triples. He doesn't hit for a lot of power, obviously, only 2 homers and 21 RBIs, but you don't expect a lot of power. You know, Chase Elliott is kind of the exception second base. You don't expect a lot of power at second base. He's a good fielder. I give Cesar Hernandez an A-. I've been impressed with what I've seen out of him. And Pete McCannon, this team is, they had that really hot April and then they and beginning of May also, and then they had a really bad June, but kind of finished June strong and started off July a little bit strong. So I like what, this team was predicted. We talk about, you know, Las Vegas line sometimes on the show, or at least I do, and I think it was 67.5. was the line before the season started, and I think they're going to be well above that. This team could possibly win maybe 75 games. Maybe if they get really hot and do well the second half of the season, maybe they'll even be .500 possibly, which would be amazing. So I would give Pete McCannon an A-. I think that he's done a great job. It's close, almost close to giving an A. I would give an A-, though.
One more guy I'd like to mention, Eric, is Cameron Rupp.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I just like the way he's been playing and the way he's been hitting the ball. I really felt catcher was a concern. We all knew Ruiz was getting older, and I was kind of frustrated last year in the draft. They didn't draft a catcher, and and Cameron Rupp to me was just sort of going to be a career backup. But, you know, I'm kind of rethinking that now. Maybe he can be a solid starting catcher. So I'm not saying he's Johnny Bench, but he seems to be doing a pretty solid job and working with the pitching staff as well. So I just want to throw him out there, and I'll give him a B+.
Yeah, that's right where I have him, Gordon. Good job. Yeah, good, yeah. 8 home runs, 17 doubles, pretty good power. He's come up with some big hits, too. And he's done a pretty good job with the pitching staff. I agree. So, good ones. Josh, Cesar Hernandez, I'm with you on McCannon. Hernandez is like one of these guys, and it depends on how, you know, what have you done for me lately. He's a couple of these guys, like Peter Boros.
Peter Borges is one of the guys.
Yeah, who started out terrible. Was barely above 200. Now, you know, he's got his average up to 274 going to today. Plays pretty good defense. I mean, if you grade him on the past month, I'd give him an A. But, you know, how do you discount the first month and a half, 2 months? Cody Ashby, similar, although he was on the disabled list for a while. And I think Hernandez falls right into that. So, that's, you know, it's subjective. Depends on what you got. So, I'll have my Phillies grades up tomorrow. You guys can check them out. Everybody can check them out and see how close I was to Josh and Gordon, although I was in line on some of them. They were right on the money with what I had and a couple others. Hernandez, obviously, we differ on. 2 weeks from tomorrow, the first players are scheduled to report to Eagles training camp. And Gordon Glance has a story up on PhillyTonight.com who guess at the 53-man roster projection for the – I won't call it guess – projection for the 53-man roster. Gordon, can you highlight maybe two or three position battles we're going to see during training camp?
Yeah, you know, just more of the piece I did, you know, going into training camp was really more of the roster, you know, really the back end of the roster. Who's going to be battling for spots as opposed to once camp starts, I guess we look more who's going to be battling for starting jobs or for jobs in terms of, you know, in different packages like nickelback and, well, you know, slot corner, they call it nowadays, or the pass rush specialists or, you know, third receiver, that kind of thing. But, you know, for now, I think what I was focusing more on was, you know, where are we going to look at, you know, some of the position battles? And I think defensive back is one spot. Other than, you know, even at the top, defensive back is really up for grabs everywhere except for the two starting safeties, Rodney McLeod and Malcolm Jenkins, which really should make for a strong pair of safeties, maybe the strongest pair the Eagles have had in, you know, since going back to Mike Brian Dawkins and Michael Lewis. But really the corners are up for grabs. They have Nolan Carroll and Eric Rowe finished last season, you know, as your starters, but or were considered to be your starters coming in. But, you know, you have Ron Brooks, who was signed from Buffalo, and you know, you have the other guy, Leotis McKelvin, signed from Buffalo. And, you know, these guys are listed ahead of them right now on the depth chart. So it will be interesting to see who starts and who ends up being the slot corner. And then, you know, behind that, you really have how many safeties are going to keep on the roster. And you have Ed Reynolds, you have Chris Maragos, and is Chris Maragos' special team skills going to be enough when Ed Reynolds kind of surpassed him last year in playing time? And what really is interesting as well, when you get – I think they're going to keep 10 defensive backs. What's really interesting is you have guys from the prior regime – Ja'Cory Shepherd and Randall Evans, who were drafted in the sixth round, and Denzel Rice, who made the team as an undrafted free agent last year, pretty much battling for jobs with guys they drafted this year, Jalen Mills in the seventh round, who's been really impressing people so far, and their sixth round pick, Blake Countess. I think a lot of those guys, and Jalen Watkins, who was a fourth round pick of the Eagles a couple years ago, cut and then brought back last year, are all kind of in that mix for the last two or three jobs, and it's kind of interesting to see if, you know, you would think the loyalty would go more toward, and in my projection I did have it going this way, more toward the guys that, you know, this regime drafted as opposed to who was drafted under Chip Kelly, although Howie Roseman did have a hand in drafting not so much Ja'Cory Shepherd or Randall Evans, but he did draft Jalen Watkins, so it does get complicated, but let's hope they put all that aside and just pick the right guys out on the field. So I would look at defensive back as a real spot, and offensive line as well. There's a small battle going for left guard, starting left guard, Alan Barbary, or Barber, I'm sorry. He should learn to pronounce that correctly, the way it's spelled. You know, they have Stefan Wisniewski, and, you know, pushing him probably for the starting job, and Isaac Seumalo, who was the, you know, third-round pick, will be in the mix there. And then after that, you really have the guys who've been here. You have Matt Tobin, and you have Dennis Kelly, and you have Andrew Gardner. You know, you have all these guys who've been here who kind of play a little bit of tackle, a little bit of guard, you know, against a lot of the guys that they've brought in. They drafted a tackle from TCU whose name I'm not going to try to pronounce right now, who plays right and left tackle, and I'm sure not going to cut a draft pick. You know, and they have some guys that, you know, they've kept the same offensive line coach, Jeff Stoutland, around, and he is he has time invested in a lot of these younger guys who've been on the practice squad, and even in the case of Josh Andrews, he's been on the roster a little bit. He coached Barrett Jones in college. So there's really a lot of bodies there. They probably will keep 10 offensive linemen as well, but it's going to be interesting how many young guys they keep as opposed to some of the more experienced guys, the Tobins, the Gardners, the Dennis Kellys, how much they really want to keep, because even though they keep 10, I think they really would want to address no more than 8 guys on game day. So versatility comes into play, but you also don't want to cut loose, cut loose veterans who could help you, but you don't want to cut loose young guys who maybe could help you, you know, long term. So offensive line will be interesting to watch, and I think defensive back will be interesting to watch if I had to look at two spots.
Yeah, we'll keep an eye on both those guys. Obviously, both those areas. Obviously, it's 2 weeks away. Josh, I'm going to come and give you your final thought in just a minute. Gordon, you're our draft expert. Are you going to help with the Raw and SmackDown draft article preview for next week, or is that out of your draft expertise?
Yeah, that's I'd probably do better with the soccer draft than I would with that one.
Oh, speaking of which, Portugal beat France in Euro 2016 today in extra time. I know you're waiting to hear that. 1-0. All right, Josh, your final thought. You start us off.
I have to use my DVR now, Eric. So.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I spoil it for you?
You did. Yes.
I apologize. Josh, your final thought.
My final thought is I'll go back to the Phillies, and I think it's a nice thing in baseball. You have the Summer Classic, the All-Star Game. How you have at least one player represented from every team, even if they're a reserve. I believe the Cubs, with the exception of catcher, have the entire infield as the starting all-stars. So that's pretty amazing. You know, we saw that with some of the Yankee teams of the past, or the Phillies and the Mets kind of had it when they had Reyes and Wright and Howard and Utley clogging up the infield in the all-star games. But the Cubs have first base, second base, shortstop, and third base all taken care of. But my final thought is about Odubel Herrera. Yes, he was really hot at the beginning of the season, hitting like 330, 340, leading the league in batting average, and he's kind of come back down to earth a little bit. But he's still close to 300, could still finish the year above 300. The Phillies don't have one guy on their team that's hitting above 300, and he could be that guy, or Cesar Hernandez could possibly be that guy, or with the way Peter Borges has been going, he could be that guy. But I think Odubel Herrera has the best shot at that. He's still got room for improvement in center field. He has made some errors, as you talked about, Eric. But I think it's a nice thing that he's made the All-Star game, and it will be a nice thing for a guy who wasn't expecting much right away. He wasn't a big-time draft pick or a big-time free agent that the Phillies got. I think he was a Rule 5 guy. So I think that it's really nice that Odubel Herrera made the All-Star game. It'll be fun. Hopefully he gets a chance to play in it. But even if he doesn't, just being a part of the festivities is always a great thing. A lot of players talk about their first All-Star game and what a great thing it is.
Thank you, Josh. I'm glad that someone's enthusiastic about the All-Star game, because as people who've listened to this program for a long time or read PhillyFanatics.com know that I'm not the biggest All-Star fan, All-Star game fan in the world. Gordon, this won't take up your final thought, but we only have about 45 seconds till we have to switch to the archive. What's your opinion on the All-Star game?
I would think the only All-Star game that is still worth anything to me is the baseball All-Star game. All the others have really become absolute jokes. You know, it's still an honor, I guess, for the players to be picked for them. But, you know, in football, you get to the Pro Bowl, and I'd say at least 50% of the guys who get picked for the Pro Bowl don't even go. You know, and the basketball game just becomes no defense, not even trying to play defense. Those games are always high scoring, but I remember that if it came down to the last, you know, 4 or 5 minutes and the outcome was
okay,
in doubt, they would play really hard. So, yeah,
I'm gonna cut you
that's
off
my opinion.
Thank the people listening live. We're going to go into archive now. And we'll start archive, Gordon, with your final thought.
Okay, I want to go around the horn a little bit here, although it's kind of a common theme. You know, baseball, I've seen a lot of things, you know, on social media. You know, they don't like Odubel Herrera. You know, he flips his bat sometimes, which to me I think is kind of cool. It reminds me of Willie Montanez, who was, you know, one of my favorite Phillies when I first started watching baseball when I was 4 or 5 years old. And, you know, so... You know, and you know, well, they shouldn't have stolen a base here because they had a big lead. And, you know, I don't know when, you know, the sport had to become so gentlemanly that, you know, there's all these rules that are in place. And, you know, just play and you know, not worry about so much about being prim and proper about it. So that's my thing with that. And, you know, kind of carrying that over to the Flyers rookie camp, which, you know, is always exciting to see. They have a lot of good prospects and to see them in. But I remember a few years ago, and I'm sure you do too, Eric, they would play another team's rookies and they would have some more intense scrimmages. Now it's just all about, you know, they go to Sea Isle and they run around and row boats and they have nice little one-on-one interviews that you can click on the website. And it's almost more like Little League with you get a participation trophy just for coming to the developmental camp. And I know it's a little different now. Maybe they don't want guys to get hurt and that kind of thing. But I like to see them put in kind of more competitive situations and see who excels. So, you know, with that. And then, you know, with the Eagles, real quick, I know, at, you know, one position you only have to worry about is quarterback. But I just want to say to the fans out there, Carson Wentz, if you want your Carson Wentz fix, then watch all the preseason games from, you know, he's going to get a lot of playing time in the preseason. But when the season starts, just if they lose a game or if Sam Bradford, I always call him Matt Bradford because I know a politician by that name. Sam Bradford has a bad game or, you know, don't be calling for Wentz. Even if Bradford gets injured, you'll see Chase Daniel. Just extract the idea that Carson Wentz is going to play from your brain, and it's not. There's no positive that can come out of it because they'll probably lose, and it would just help the Cleveland Browns get a better pick because they own the Eagles' first round pick. So enjoy, get your Carson Wentz fix in the preseason and judge him on that, and then save that, keep that memory, and then look forward to the future. And then last thing with the Sixers, Darius Saric, now he's saying he is going to come over and play after he was, and then he wasn't, and then he was again. And I think what's really going on behind the scenes is it's whether or not the Sixers and him feel like it's worth his while playing time-wise. And I think a lot of it hinges on will they trade one of their bigs. So, you know, when it seems like he's not going to come, maybe a trade is off. When it seems like he is going to come, maybe a trade is on again. And I wouldn't be surprised, and I don't know why, and Josh might know, hear different things out in Los Angeles, if something happens involving Okafor and D'Angelo Russell. So that's keep that one in mind as well. So I kind of went around the horn to the four teams.
I have a bunch of things I was going to say. I would say the flip the bat thing. I would just give it away by saying I know one of those people on the flip the bat thing is an Eagles writer, Eagles beat writer,
right,
who we've had on this program, and that's all I'm going to say. It's an Eagles beat writer we've had on this program is one of the people upset about the flipping back. Gordon, I think that the Flyers thing, they play the other rookie team in that rookie training camp in September. I don't remember in development camp. I could be wrong. The other thing I'm going to say really good, your Eagles point. For people who haven't read it yet, this is Gordon's 53-man roster projection. You make a really good point that the Eagles don't have a fourth quarterback on the roster. And figuring Bradford's not going to play much, you're right. We're going to see a lot of Carson Wentz. I mean, the mop-up guy who's not going to make the roster out there. All the quarterbacks on the roster, which is a really good point. And there are lots of other good points in that article, so please give it a read. I'm gonna double up here. I won't go around the horn, but I'm going to double up. One, my final thought is on the old guys, or the old guys and girls here. This past weekend, Serena Williams, at age 34, she's going to be 35 in September, won Wimbledon again, and that's her 22nd major title, which ties her for Steffi Graf for the most in the open era. And Serena Williams making a case at age 34. She continues to add to her legacy that she's the greatest women's tennis player of all time. In that same tournament, although he didn't win the tournament, Roger Federer, 34 years old, he's going to be 35 in early August, came from two sets down to win a five-set match against Marin Cilic in this quarterfinals. And then I don't know if he ran out of gas or he certainly turned his ankle at some point in the fifth set, loses a five-setter in the semifinals to Milos Raonic. I hope I pronounced that right, Raonic. Two straight five-setters for Roger Federer. Denied his chance for an 18th title in the semis, but really magnificent tennis from Federer at age 34, almost 35, which is like a senior citizen in tennis life. You're talking about 34-year-olds out there winning tournaments or coming close. That's way advanced age for tennis, where most of the good players are done by the time they're 30 or right in there. And finally, on that in the old person's category, and I'm not going to call him old to his face, I'm older than he is, but Brock Lesnar, at age 38, after 4 years, nearly 5 years off from Ultimate Fighting, returns and wins a unanimous decision against a guy who's 42, granted, but a really dangerous opponent. And to come back at his age after having not competed for almost 5 years is just a remarkable accomplishment in a very, very physically demanding sport. And he's my third in that we'll call the 30-somethings who really shined during these past couple of days. I'm going to throw one more thing out there. My column this past week on the NBA, we talked about all the money being spent. We talked about this last week. $3 billion plus of contracts handed out by the NBA. You know what? Give a little bit back to the fans. I figured out the math, and, you know, that roughly if every team in the league gave $10 back per ticket, it would cost the teams, depending on how many tickets they sell, roughly around $7 million. Salary cap went up more than $20 million, went up $24 million. Instead of giving $24 million to mediocre free agents, which is what happened with a lot of these teams, cut the ticket prices by $10 per ticket. Take $7 million of that $24 and give it back to the fans. If it weren't for the fans watching the games, you wouldn't have these huge television rights fees, broadcast fees that pushed up the salary cap. NBA owners, it'll never happen. It's pie in the sky. I know that, and I said that in my column. But it'd be really nice if they consider giving some of that money back to the fans. $10 discounts across the board on tickets. Josh, you with me on that?
Yeah, it sounds good.
I thought so. I don't think anybody's going to check that. All right, thank you very much, everybody, for listening to the program. Thanks to Josh Landsberg. Gordon, you're not going to be with us next week, correct?
I will be somewhere in, I don't even know where, Wisconsin, South Dakota, someplace. Yeah, there's a chance I could call in, but we'll see.
Okay. All right, and so thank you, everybody, for listening. Check out PhillyFanatics.com. Philly's grades going up tomorrow. Gordon's 53-man roster projection on there. My column about NBA giving money back to the fans through ticket discounts. Fish and chips column, all sorts of great stuff. Thank you for listening, and we will talk to you next week.